Blog Talk Radio.
Chair rolling away as I talk to you thing going on right now. That's always fun. I also resurrected probably the worst shirt in my closet. I have the, shut this fucking thing off. Okay, there we go. I got the Italian tablecloth shirt on, where I'm just wearing an old school Italian tablecloth, where it's like all white and it has the red stripes, the pattern, the like crisscross pattern, whatever. Yeah, I look ridiculous, but that's all right, because I don't give a fuck. Hope everybody's day is going good. Got a lot of great stuff to talk about today. I'm going to kick it off here with Marco Rubio, and just a perfect example of what's wrong with our political system. And in all fairness, this isn't really just Marco Rubio here. It's the example I'll give you is one that you probably could bring up about a majority of people in both parties missing stuff that actually has to do with helping people in order to go blow donors. We also have an update on the Syrian refugee fallout. I have Donald Trump, who wants to copy some Gestapo tactics. Stay classy, buddy. I'm going to actually give you the breakdown of what happens when the U.S. does accept refugees. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, and there's a lot of just assumptions out there. I'm going to tell you what actually goes on when somebody wants to become come to the U.S. and they are a refugee, and we consider taking them in and whatnot. Really interesting story, and it'll make people realize it's not this caricature that you think it is. You know, like there is thorough vetting and rigorous background checks, and given that that's the case, it's the right thing to do to still be on the side of allowing in refugees and you know, being on the side of immigration. We also have Pat Robertson talking about the Syrian refugee crisis and telling us what God thinks, because who knows better than Pat Robertson. And then later on in the show, have we discovered the most corrupt man on planet Earth? There's a story about a guy. I don't want to ruin it now and tell you the country he's involved and stuff, but here's your spoiler. It's billions of dollars that was taken. God, people are ridiculous. Like, you know, if you're going to be a corrupt backward person, why would you not, you know, like take something that where if you're caught that you have some kind of argument? You know what I mean? They just get people fucking redline right away. Like, oh, if I'm going to be corrupt, I might as well go balls to the wall and steal billions of dollars. It's unreal. All right, and then North Korea later on in the show, a bunch of stuff. Let me go ahead and get started here. And we'll do that with Marco Rubio, and then after that we'll get into the Syrian refugee situation and much more. Raw Story has an article about Marco Rubio out that's really... that really gets at the heart of what's wrong in our political system. So they say the following, quote, Marco Rubio has come under scrutiny for being an absentee lawmaker, and he didn't help that image Wednesday when he skipped out on a meeting about the U.S. role in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks on Paris. Now, that's bad enough that you missed that, okay, but why specifically did he miss it? Well, the answer is to attend what's being described as, quote, a ritzy West Coast fundraiser. Oh, Marco, you didn't do it. Why would you do that? Marco, that's so stupid. He missed a hearing on how to respond policy-wise to the terror attacks in Paris because he needed to go rub elbows with rich donors and blow them and get money for his campaign. And remember, he gave a full-throated defense at the last debate, where they were like, you know, you're not there, like, ever. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I'd never heard anybody say this about John McCain. John McCain wasn't there ever either. You know you're in a bad place when you don't actually defend yourself. You just say, other people are fucked up, too. Why are you focusing on me being fucked up? Other people are fucked up, too. Well, the reality is you miss more than almost anybody. And, you know, you miss things that really you shouldn't miss, and that it should be obvious to anybody who gives a shit about this that you shouldn't miss. Man, it's not like he missed, hey, a discussion of highway funding that was going to pass anyway and whatever, some normal scheduled vote conversation. He missed a meeting about the policy response to the terror attacks in Paris, all because he had to go raise more money for his campaign. And, I mean, if we really get down to what's actually happening here, we know it's corruption, it's open corruption, it's open bribery. So we now have a system in the United States of America where, instead of focusing on the substantive response to a terrorist attack, people go and sell out and basically sell themselves, sell their votes to the highest bidder and act like, okay, well, there's no problem with that. Yes, there is a problem with that. I always find it hilarious when we mock the oligarchy in Russia, because I've spoken about this before. I think it was a PBS show I was watching where they said, oh, the income inequality in Russia is so bad that X number of oligarch families owns whatever percentage of the wealth it was. I don't remember the exact numbers, forgive me for that, but I remember I im immediately when I heard that, since I know a lot about the numbers in the US, I was like, wait a second. I think the numbers they just cited as like evidence of how corrupt Russia is, I think those numbers are actually better than the ones in the US. And I looked it up, and needless to say, that was the case. You know, I think it's the six people in the Walton family alone have more money than the bottom 40% of the American people. And they're citing statistics about the oligarchs in Russia, which aren't as bad. I'm like, what? What the fuck? But that shows you we're unable to turn our criticism inward, or at least most of the country is unable to do that. But it's time for people like us who actually know the details of it to stand up and say, guys, you're getting fucked. You don't even realize it, but you're getting screwed every day repeatedly. This is the reason why you don't get what you want. I mean, I always bring up the same examples, but I do it for a reason because it's very illustrative of the point. But look at the percentage of the American people that want to be involved in Afghanistan still. It's only 17%. That means the overwhelming majority are like, okay, get the fuck out. Enough. We've tried. Nothing works. It hasn't gotten better. Let's get the fuck out. We're just wasting money. And even under a Democratic administration, and they're supposed to be the better guys, Obama's still like, yeah, I think we're going to stay there longer and keep X number thousands of troops in there. This is what we're faced with, man. This is what we're faced with. In the United States of America, you miss substantive policy conversations in order to go blow a donor and sell out. It's unreal. And for all the jackasses who act like that's not what's happening here, really, then what do you think is happening? What do you think is happening? Marco Rubio's going to raise money from billionaires because he cares about democracy? He cares about what the people in Wyoming think? No, if he did care about that, then that would be where all of his campaign stops are with actual people. And that's not the case. And he also would, if he cared about the people, he would vote on the shit that the people elected you for. I mean, we elected you in order to vote on policy substance, including, yes, responses to terrorist attacks. So, I don't know. It gets under my skin more than anything else, if you can't tell. Now let me move on before I lose it. We'll go to Syria's Bashar Assad. And I will have a very unpopular opinion on this, but nonetheless, I don't give a shit. Syria's Bashar Assad went on Italian TV this week, and he said that Western policies have led to the creation of more terrorists. Now, needless to say, a lot of people are not happy about the source that said this, because Bashar Assad is the dictator in Syria, and he's responsible for killing a large number of people. Now, the circumstances that led to that, it's debatable and it's questionable, and you know, it's not as cut and dry as he's the most evil person in the region. In fact, the majority of the rebels now that are fighting Assad are worse people than him. So there were accusations of Assad using chemical weapons, so he immediately handed over his chemical weapons to the West and said, here, no problem. There was also evidence, by the way, of the rebels using chemical weapons. And as we've spoken about before, the two biggest fighting groups in the region, ISIS and al-Nusra Front. Al-Nusra is the al-Qaeda offshoot in Syria. So this is a classic example of the U.S. looking at a situation, looking at a civil war in this case, and saying, we don't like either side. But when Bashar Assad says something which is true, like Western policies have increased the number of terrorists, people are going, well, who the fuck are you? I mean, you've killed a lot of people. Shut the fuck up. That's largely the response to this. So let me give you some more details. According to the International Business Times, quote, Assad added that the terrorists responsible for last Friday's attacks in Paris were trained in Syria with the help of Turks, the Saudis, and the Qataris, and, quote, of course the Western policy that supported the terrorists in different ways. They continue, ISIS was started in Iraq, Assad said, quoting former British Prime Minister Tony Blair as saying, the Iraqi war helped create ISIS. All right, now, is this true or false? This is 100% true. Now, it's clear, and I shouldn't even have to say this, but there are some idiots out there who are intent on twisting your words when you talk about issues like this. I'm, of course, not taking the Alex Jones conspiracy route where he's like, you know, the West literally created Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and ISIS terrorists, and what they did is they put them in control, they gave them weapons, know what they do with it, and they're on the side of it. No, that's too far, and that's not true. Of course, the ideology of Salafi Islam and extremist fundamentalist Islam, that existed without the U.S., that predates U.S. imperialism and intervention, no question about it. But our incompetence has increased the number of terrorists, increased the number of people that subscribe to that ideology. And this is exactly the point that Bashar Assad is making. And when he says, hey man, you know, it was Iraq, look at Iraq, he's right when he says that. And I'll go a step further here, and I think he alluded to this later on as well. Our policy of supporting the mythological moderate Sunni rebels in Syria has led to the creation of more terrorists. Now, the people who did the Paris attack are actually European-born, but there was some evidence that some of them may have actually been trained in Syria, and they'd been, like, back and forth. And Assad is right. I mean, that's something that people don't like to hear, and everybody likes to, you know, fight the power. You got to be a good liberal and be a rebel and be against the big, bad dictator in the region. But Saddam Hussein, remember how quickly all the liberals realized, oh, right, we shouldn't have toppled that guy because what came about after that was worse. Well, now we're in the same position with Bashar Assad. And you have people across the political spectrum like, okay, well, we got to get rid of him. Well, how do you know that what's going to follow him is not going to be worse? In fact, it's almost a guarantee at this point that it will be worse. Whatever moderate rebels there were in the region have long ago fled. There's a few FSA fighters remaining in there, but they're few and far between. And the overwhelming majority are jihadists. So when Bashar Assad says, hey, jackasses, you might want to look in the mirror because you're kind of breeding this problem that you despise so much, it is 100% true. Now, will the West learn from this? Doubtful. I mean, there were preliminary reports that you had Putin and Obama and they were going to work together in order to fight back against, you know, the ISIS in the region in Syria, but now it's looking like Obama doesn't want Russia to be part of any comprehensive team that goes in there and fights ISIS. So they're floundering again, and they're trying to find that middle ground that doesn't fucking work, where the U.S. says, well, why don't we just create a third force in there that opposes Assad and ISIS? Because unicorns don't exist, Washington. Remember how stupid you have to keep in perspective, I should say, how stupid they are on this. It was General Petraeus who said, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea if we arm and equip moderate Syrian rebels? I mean, I'm sorry, moderate al-Qaeda to be Syrian rebels. He said moderate al-Qaeda. Moderate al-Qaeda. As if that's a thing. That's crazy, man. And that shows you the U.S. doesn't care. We're so opposed to Assad because Assad is aligned with Russia and Iran that we would accept, and in fact we would be gleeful over a new Wahhabi regime in Syria as long as those people who are running the government are somehow nice to us. So, in other words, we would have Saudi Arabia 2.0 in Syria, and we wouldn't give a fuck, because at least they'd answer to us. But naturally, we're playing with fire like we always are when we back Wahhabi regimes, because they might give us oil and be our buddy in that sense, but then behind our backs, they're going to continue to fund these same terrorist groups that are causing all the trouble, as Saudi Arabia does. All right. Now, I must move on to the refugee stories. This is going to take a while. I think I have two of them here, and they're very important, and there's a lot of detail in them. Actually, I'm going to put off the one that gives you the details as to what a refugee has to go through, and I'm going to start with the stupid responses from the right. The response from the right to the Paris terror attacks has been stupid, as expected. We now have a mayor in Virginia praising the former Japanese internment camps. You remember that? And he's using that as an excuse to reject refugees. Now, does he have the authority to do that? No, but it's not going to stop him from broadcasting to the world that he's a bigot and saying, I'm going to take zero, I will take none. We also have over half the states in the U.S. rejecting refugees. Again, even though they don't have the power to, that's a federal policy, and it doesn't matter if you're a governor and you say, I don't like it. You don't have the authority. Apparently, you don't understand how the U.S. system functions. And now we have Donald Trump crossing a line that heretofore was uncrossable, just uncrossable. He goes so far here that this is even low for Donald Trump. And he said a lot of fucking crazy things, a lot of crazy things. This is even further than the, you know, Mexicans. I assume some of them are good people, but they're rapists and they're criminals. This is beyond that. So in an interview with Yahoo News, quote, the Republican presidential frontrunner refused to rule out requiring Muslims to carry special identification showing their faith, which the Third Reich required Jews to do with the yellow badge that resembled the Star of David. Certain things, this is him now, certain things will be done that we never thought would happen in this country in terms of information and learning about the enemy. We're going to have to do things that were frankly unthinkable a year ago. He also went on to repeat the idea that we should be spying on all mosques. All mosques. All right, this is a horrific road to go down. Now, as I've said now maybe 10 times on the show, I'm a moderate on the issue of immigration and on the issue of refugees. So in other words, I'm not in favor of the way they do it in some places in Europe, where they just basically let you in immediately and all they need is a case file and that's the end of the conversation. That's the left position. I'm more in the middle, where I say, no, do a rigorous background check, vet the people, make sure they don't have anything bad in their background, and then you bring them in, and then it's no problem. So I'm in the middle ground on this. But what he's talking about here is, in all seriousness, borderlining fascism, if not already there. You want to make them carry a special identification card. All right, you do know that's unconstitutional, and you do know that you are mirroring policies like they reference here that the Third Reich would love, and that they did, except they did it with Jews, and you want to do it with Muslims. Guys, the overwhelming majority of the people who are leaving that region are escaping war and escaping violence, and they hate ISIS. And remember, the people who did the Paris terrorist attacks, none of them were from Syria. They were European-born. Now, that opens another can of worms, because they need to have a discussion about how that could happen, where they're radicalized when they're born in Europe, and, you know, you got to get into assimilation issues and stuff like that. But bottom line is, for you to fearmonger over a group of people that didn't even do the attack when you're linking them to the attack, and you want to generalize about all other refugees, that's crazy. And the idea that you should spy on all mosques. Guys, yes, I get it. If there's a radical cleric who's preaching an Al-Qaeda philosophy, an ISIS philosophy, Of course, you get a warrant, you spy on that person, you take them down for whatever crimes they may commit. No question about it. Nobody's going to be against you on that. But when you say, all mosques in America, we're going to spy on them, oh my goodness, what have you done? What have you done? You then made it an us versus them mentality. You've fallen into the tribalism trap, and you're making it so that where do moderate Muslims then have to go? They're going to say, how am I supposed to... I mean, I want to be on the side of the Americans, I'm on their side, but they hate me, they're telling me they hate me, they're treating me like I'm one of these bad guys anyway, so what am I going to do? This is the same problem. Fundamentalism and right-wing policies breeds more fundamentalism and more right-wing policies. It's the same thing that happens in Israel all the time, where they'll bomb the fuck out of the Palestinian territories, kill tremendous numbers of women and children, and then people who otherwise wouldn't fucking want Hamas in power because they micromanage their lives, and, you know, they crack down when it comes to social issues. They're like, okay, well, these are the only guys who say they'll protect me, so I guess I got to go with these guys because the other guys are bombing the fuck out of me, and they treat me like the other, and they don't like me. So you're exacerbating the problem further, and let me leave you with this right here. This is a very important fact. Quote, Gallup found that 78% of Muslims, this is in the U.S., believe violence which kills civilians is never justified, whereas just 38% of Protestant Christians and 39% of Catholics agreed with that sentiment, and 56% of atheists answered similarly. So do you understand what that means? That means in the United States of America, Muslims are the number one group to reject violence against civilians. The number one group. My people, atheists, are even less. And if we're using Donald Trump's logic, I mean, hey man, look, if you're under 50%, I guess we should put, you know, we should have identification cards for all the Christians and the Protestants, for the Protestants and the Catholics, right? Only 38% of them say violence against civilians is always wrong. Well, you know, maybe they're going to commit an act of violence. They're telling you up front, hey, I'm not necessarily against violence against civilians. That's a dangerous person. Maybe we should spy on all the churches. Maybe we should take away their civil liberties and their rights because, you know, they could possibly be dangerous. This is a terrible, terrible way of thinking. Don't fall into the trap. When terrorism happens or something bad happens, you need to attack the problem from within your value system. If you throw out your values the second something goes wrong, you never really believed in your values in the first place. Okay. So I'm going to take a break here, and then let me tell you what you have to look forward to when we come back. I'm going to tell you exactly what happens when refugees come into the U.S. I'm going to tell you the process they go through. Then I'm going to give you Pat Robertson's response to this because, you know, he loves Jesus so much that he wanted to give you Jesus's thoughts because they're his own. He's a Christian, you know. Then we'll get into Ben Stein thinking that Obama hates America. What a deep thinker. These guys on the right, they just every day they never cease to amaze me. And then will Mexico legalize not only weed, which they kind of sort of did a little bit already, they opened the door for it. Will they legalize all drugs? What? Good googly moogly. Well, we're going to discuss that and much more. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. All right, let's do this thing. So in the wake of the Paris terror attacks, there's been a lot of talk about Syrian refugees. Now, the attackers weren't Syrian, but nonetheless, the right wants to shut the borders completely. Well, as I said maybe 25 times now, I mean, I don't know, I really lost count, but in all seriousness, at least 4 or 5 times, there's a middle ground on the issue of immigration and on the issue of taking in refugees. You don't immediately reject every single person. That would be ridiculous, because you know you're rejecting a lot of people who need your help and are totally innocent and who have never done anything wrong. But you don't also immediately let everybody in. Happy middle ground. Is that really all that hard to grasp? Apparently for a lot of people it is. So around 2010, in the U.S., we accidentally let in Al-Qaeda guys as refugees from Iraq, and they were in Kentucky. So as a result of that, now they were able to nab them and everything and get rid of them. But as a result of that, we tightened the vetting process for refugees in response. And now the only way to describe the vetting system we have is impeccable. Now, I'm not one to often give credit to the U.S. government. I don't know if you've watched the show at all. But this is a case where, credit where credit is due, they do a fantastic job looking into the background of people who are coming here as refugees to try to avoid, you know, something like that from happening again. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think that, you know, you're immediately a bigot if you want to take the middle ground and be smart as to who you let in. I think it's just practical and it's intelligent. So I want to explain the system to you, and you can see that there's really nothing to worry about when it comes to letting in refugees, as long as we keep this system in place. Now, to be fair, there are some people who are to the left of me who say that we should copy some of the systems that they have in Europe in certain places, where they just say, give me a case file, and that's it, and let them in immediately. And maybe that makes me a dick. I know it slows down the process. I know it makes it so that a lot of good people are going to have to wait really long in order to get in. And maybe I am the bad guy, and I'll take that. No problem. But I like the system that we have, and I want to give you the details on it. So Kyle Blaine reports on this, quote, the U.S. has one of the most robust security screening processes in the world for potential refugees. Many European countries will accept a refugee application based simply on a case file, like I was describing. The U.S. system works much differently. Fewer than 2,000 Syrian refugees have been admitted to the United States since the start of the Syrian civil war, though the Obama administration said the United States will accept 10,000 refugees in 2016. The complex process takes an average of 18 to 24 months. To gain admittance into the United States, a Syrian must clear all of these steps. Multiple high-level security checks, including different government agencies, the FBI being one of them, and there's many others, biometric screening, a mandatory interview with the Department of Homeland Security, a medical screening, and a cultural orientation program, which consists of videos on housing, employment, education, and hygiene, among other topics. So they go on to say that the only thing that we're missing in the system here is somebody who's on the ground in Syria engaging in a pre-vetting process for the vetting process. Okay, let's not be ridiculous. Let's not be stupid. We have, some could say, the most strict, stringent, robust background check and vetting process to let in any refugees. With a system like this, I would honestly be in favor of increasing the number of refugees that we allow into the U.S., for sure. Now, is it going to be foolproof? No, nothing's foolproof. But, you know, is it a risk worth taking where you know that on principle you're doing the right thing, because the overwhelming majority of people who are coming are people who are good people and who are not terrorists, who don't want to bring harm to anybody, who just want to have an opportunity and want to have a shot? No, I think that's, there's a happy middle ground on this. This is, again, I keep repeating myself. And we should go down that middle ground. Now that you know how we do it, it just doesn't make sense to say I'm going to close my eyes and scream no because I'm a petulant child and I'm a baby who's scared. That's what it comes down to, scared Republicans. I just don't want to help anybody. And isn't it funny that these are the people who say they're the most Christian? I believe in the message of Jesus. I want to help everybody, except when it comes to actually practicing that in the real world and people desperately need our help, well, then no, fuck that. It's so sad. And, of course, it's been basically the polar opposite reaction by a lot of people now. There was a mayor in Virginia who we were just speaking about who was praising the former Japanese internment system. Really? We haven't graduated past that yet? That's what you're going to say? And then you have Donald Trump, who said we need to spy on all mosques, not, hey, get a warrant for the radical ones, get bad people and lock them up. No, so spy on all mosques, Donald Trump said. And he said we should have identification cards for Muslims. Exactly like the star in Nazi Germany. What are you doing? I mean, this is fucking crazy talk. Guys, we need to, in response to the Paris attacks, now none of those people were Syrian, so just keep that in mind. Of course, they were ISIS-affiliated, but they weren't from Syria. They're actually European-born. The proper thing to do is be intelligent and specific in our response. You don't want to say, you know, because bad people exist in the world, therefore we have a pass to kill civilians, and that's fine, like Ted Cruz literally said. No, we need to be smart, intelligent, rational, and stay within our value system, as yes, we get the bad guys who did it. Yes, go after them. But you don't punish people who didn't do it, because that would be stupid. Okay. Next. Oh boy, Pat Robertson time. I got a doozy of a segment for him. Pat Robertson was asked about the refugee crisis with a bunch of people coming from Syria. Let's just say his response is counter to what he says his life philosophy is.
This is Henderson. With the horrible ongoing ISIS attacks, I was wondering what you think Jesus would say about letting Syrian refugees into America. Is it more important to protect our country from evil or to try to reach out and save those who do not know him?
By nature, I am compassionate. And if I see a family that is fleeing oppression, I would say, let's put our arms around them and help them. That's my own personal. But from a policy standpoint, the truth is, these evil people have infiltrated the refugee hordes, and like one of them up in Paris was a man who had come in through the Macedonian corridor up into Europe, and he was, I guess, Syrian, I don't know what he was, but nevertheless, he was one of those refugees, and he brought mayhem. So I do think the country's got to be vigilant, but my heart is to help the poor. If I saw a family that's fleeing the oppression and the war in Syria, I would open my heart and say, let's take them in, but policymakers may disagree.
Isn't that unbelievable? On every other issue, not only does he say, hey, this is what I believe, he says, this is what my religion says, and we should make that law, because whatever my religion says should be policy. I want to marry church and state together. I talk about this all the time. That's all that matters. Yes, discriminate against the gays. Don't let them get married. And all of this, because of the Bible, because of Christianity, we need to implement it. That's what he says on every other issue. But then when it comes to one where the answer would be to act liberally, he's like, well, you know, my personal belief is, sure, I want to help the poor, I want to help refugees, but policy-wise, I mean, from a policy perspective, we should probably do something else. Oh, well, isn't that fucking convenient? So, for those of you who don't know what the New Testament says on this, or what Jesus says on this, or what's in the Bible on this, we actually have answers. You know, I like how he throws it out there, like, well, I'm just saying what I believe. But wait, on every other issue, you say you are a medium for the Lord, for God. And now all of a sudden you're like, my opinion is this, and policy should be this. Well, how about I educate you, Pat, as to what your Lord would say, and then you can change your mind accordingly, because again, you believe he's God, I don't believe he's God. But you believe it, so then I guess you have to do what he says, because he is God. What, are you going to spit in God's eye? What, do you want to go to hell? I guess you want to go to hell. Matthew 25, lines 35 to 40. Quote, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did to one of the least of these my brothers, you did to me." So however you treat the person who's the poorest among you, who's the hungriest among you, who's in the worst situation, that's what you're doing to Jesus. So when you reject an innocent Syrian family that has nothing to do with fucking terrorism, they're fleeing terrorism, when you reject that person, Pat, you're doing that to Jesus. That's not me speaking, that's Jesus speaking. I didn't say it. I didn't come up with it. Jesus said it. But again, when it flies against conservative politics, Bible. Who says something about Bible? What does the Bible mean? The Bible, is that some sort of workout program? Is that a food? Is that a dish or something? What is the Bible? What's a Bible? I don't know what that means. All right, more. James 2, lines 14 to 17. "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." Oh, so in other words, you can't just talky-talky all the time. You have to walky-walky. So when Pat Robertson on the show every day, "Jesus, God, Bible, stuff, religion." Jesus said, that's bullshit. You got to actually do some shit, son. All you care so much about, prove it, bitch. Go out there, go talk to a homeless guy, give him a meal. Open a homeless shelter, help people out. Go bring some Syrian refugees, not just into the U.S., into your home. What good is faith without works? What good is you saying you believe X without acting on it? Not me speaking, Jesus speaking. Now understand, I'm not as liberal as Jesus. I've said this time and time again. I'm a moderate on the issue of immigration and on refugees. Do a thorough background check and then let them in. Don't let them in first, ask questions later. There's a middle ground here. But I don't believe in the Bible. I don't believe in Jesus. So I don't have to sign up and say, I ditto what he says because this is my God. But Pat says that's what he believes. And then he's just like, inconvenient. I don't like Jesus on this one. Agree to disagree. Well, I didn't know such a lowly human being had the authority and the ability to just brush that aside and disagree with the Lord your God. And finally, Proverbs 19:17 says, "Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his deed." So God will only repay you if you care about the poor, you care about the sick, you care about the downtrodden. Isn't it funny how the people who claim to believe in Jesus the most act the least like Jesus? Next, Ben Stein. Ben Stein went on the hilarious and irrelevant Newsmax TV to give his opinion on Obama to the hilarious and irrelevant Steve Malzberg. Let's listen.
Obama has been wrong from day one about ISIS. He called them the JV team. He said that they weren't really serious or important. He has not in any sense addressed their threat. And he's a bad joke. As the leader of the most important nation in the world, he's a bad joke.
He is a bad joke. What's worse, Rush Limbaugh kicked off the show today by saying that Obama is a danger to the safety of this nation.
Oh, he's a very real danger. Well, I mean, I'm very interested in psychology. I'm very interested in psychoanalysis. I guess I probably should have been a psychologist, but or a psychoanalyst. question is, why is he so angry at America? I mean, why? I don't think there's much question that he does not wish America well. He has a real strong hatred of America. Now, is it because he's part black? I don't know. Is it because he felt his father was mistreated by the British in Kenya? I don't know. We don't know. We just know that in terms of being a forthright, bold leader who takes on our enemies, he's not there. He's missing in action.
Oh, there are so many parts of that infuriate me and that are 100% incorrect. Where is he? He's not attacking. He's not fighting our enemies. He's just weak. I don't understand this. Well, then I guess you don't read the fucking news, do you? Do you? There's been thousands of bombs dropped on ISIS. Thousands. Guys, we're engaged in military intervention in 7 different countries. That's unbelievable. Let's see if I can remember all of them. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. That's 6. I'm missing one. See, that's how bad this is. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. Don't remember the last one. That's when you know your foreign policy is fucked up. Now, again, I wish we were involved in fewer countries, and I wish that when we did any military action, we abided by international law and went through Congress because we're supposed to. That's what's constitutional, and we were very specific in what we did. We're not that. Obama's way too far right-wing when it comes to foreign policy, and these guys are like, yeah, weak, he's not strong enough. How many bombs do you want him to drop? The West has dropped over 8,000 bombs on ISIS. How many before you say, you know what, they're fighting. I think they're fighting now. Obama just announced we're going to leave troops in Afghanistan and put more troops, boots on the ground, advisors and special ops in Iraq and Syria. And these guys are like, why is he so fucking weak? I don't understand. And then they're like, he has a hatred of America. Is it because he's black? I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm just throwing it out there. I didn't say it. I'm just asking a question, man. That's how you know somebody's lying to me. The higher pitch you get, the more it's like, oh, okay, that person's probably lying. No, but think about how absurd that is. Just, well, he's black. What do you mean? He hates America. He's black. In all seriousness, I think that stems from projection. Because Ben Stein thinks in his mind, well, I mean, come on, let's face it. If I was black in America, I would be pissed at America. Because, yeah, it is true that they've been fucked up to them all along from day one. That was always my theory, even with the segregationists. You know how the segregationists, you know, would act like, oh, this is going to be a terror. If we give blacks equal power, they're going to take over and they're going to destroy us. Now, why are they saying that? Because what they really believe is if I was in their position, that's what I would do. So when black people were calling for, we just want to be equal to you guys. What the fuck, man? We're just, you know, just treat us equal. Give us the same rights. That's it. That's all we're asking for. And the segregationists are like, well, no, we can't do that. We got to keep our boot on your fucking neck and take away all your rights because we've been so fucked up for you for so long that if we give you equal rights, I mean, you're going to kill us immediately, right? Because that's what we would do if we were in your position. Ben Stein's showing the same kind of psychological projection here. He's like, well, I mean, come on. I would be pissed if I was black in America. Why is he not pissed? No, Obama has, there are compilations of him just fawning to the point where I want to vomit when I watch it. Just fawning over America. America is the greatest country in the world. Only in America do you have the opportunity to do the X, Y, and Z. It's not a question of if America will lead. It's a question of how America will lead in the world. And my idea is blah, 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 blah. Again, to the point where I'm like, oh, God, shut the fuck up. Too much fawning, too much bullshit. I can't take it. But see, that's the point. It doesn't matter what Obama does, what he says, no matter what. He's black. He probably hates America. He's a Democrat. He definitely hates America. Whatever. Just what? We don't know. Why does he hate America? Go talk to a grandmother in Wyoming who has health care now when she didn't before, when she couldn't afford it because of Obamacare. Ask her if President Obama hates America. Ask her. You're not going to do that, right? You know, ask, I don't know, people who feel safer because we just got a peace deal with Iran, a nuclear deal, and we got a deal with Cuba. You know, is that, you know, why does he hate America so much, making peace with our enemies and shit? That's fucked up, am I right? Am I right? Ask people who are going to be helped by the undocumented immigration executive orders that he did. Ask them how much he hates America. He did that because he wants to give people a shot at the American dream because he believes in America. No, he hates America because he doesn't agree with me on everything, and he's not white. What, did I say that out loud? And finally, I'm going to give them ironic credit on one point here. When they say, well, look, Obama's a danger to the safety of this nation. That may be true in a very limited sense, yes, but not in the sense they think. Because to the extent that is true, it would be because of things like the bombing in Kunduz, where we massacred civilians and doctors when we bombarded in an onslaught of airstrikes a civilian area, Doctors Without Borders building. It's stuff like that would make it so that he makes us less safe. When you do drone strikes of wedding processions, as they've done, or funerals, as they've done, or grandmas picking vegetables, as they've done, that increases the number of jihadists in the world, and that increases terrorism. So in that specific respect, yes, Obama does make us, makes it so that we're not as safe. But their point is effectively the exact opposite, because they think he's too pacifist, and that's why we're not safe under him. When in reality, like I already described to you, we've dropped thousands of bombs, and we're militarily involved in 7 different countries. So that's not true. Okay. Should I do one more? Yes, I'm going to do one more here. This will be a really good story on drugs. Vice is reporting that the former president of Mexico made some bold claims about drug policy. They say, quote, hard drugs like cocaine, crystal meth, and heroin may be legally available in Mexico within a decade, said former President Vicente Fox in an interview with Reuters this week. He was responding to the news of a landmark case in the Mexican Supreme Court, where the court ruled it unconstitutional to ban marijuana use. While the ruling only applied to the group of plaintiffs involved in that specific case, many say it signals shifting tides in the country's prohibition laws. They continue here. Fox, who was the country's president between 2000 and 2006, is now a vocal advocate for the legalization of all drugs, which he says is a way of ending Mexico's bloody war between cartels and authorities. Quote, the dramatic war on drugs in Mexico, in which tens of thousands of young Mexicans have been killed, is proof of prohibition's failure. And Fox wrote this in an op-ed for the Globe and Mail last year. We must extricate ourselves from it. So this is a guy who was a former president of Mexico, who has direct hands-on experience with this, and he's like, yeah, you know that move where we gotta be like really tough guy, macho, and we crack down on the cartels and we fight them? Turns out that failed miserably, and it had the opposite of the intended effect. So you chop off the head of the drug cartels, and another one, a bigger one, a worse one, grows in its place. We covered the articles about a month ago on the mega cartels that are now coming out of Mexico, where you kill the leader of one cartel, and a worse cartel pops up in his place. Because how are you going to win a war here when there's a genuine demand for the product? So when you make it illegal and you push it underground, well then by definition, the only people that are going to be involved in that business are criminals. And where there are criminals, there is criminal activity. So, for example, with Prohibition here in the U.S., when we banned alcohol, you had the mafia get incredibly powerful. The mafia could have never been what it was without Prohibition. Because you banned alcohol, you gave a monopoly to the worst guys, the mafia, so they provided all the alcohol to all the speakeasies. Did you know there were more speakeasies? Years after Prohibition began, there were more speakeasies than there were bars beforehand. So they may have inadvertently made alcohol more popular. And when there's a dispute underground on the black market with the drug trade, what happens? How do you solve it? Well, here's how you solved it during Prohibition, with Tommy guns. And you aim it at somebody's face. Whereas if a product is legal and it's taxed and it's regulated, you have some kind of dispute, what do? You put on a nice suit and tie and you go to court and you argue your case. So it's safer when it is legal, and it becomes dangerous because it's illegal. For everybody who thinks, no, it's just the nature of drugs are so bad that you need to ban them. Great. I hope you don't drink Monster Energy. I hope you don't have Red Bulls. I hope you don't take caffeine. I hope you don't drink alcohol. I hope you don't go to the doctor and get a prescription for Xanax. I hope you don't have Adderall. You know, we can go on and on here, man. Dr. Carl Hart says it best. You wouldn't even want to live in a society that's drug-free. People would be more miserable, and it would just be a worse society all around. And, of course, 80 to 90% of all drug users are moderate users and can handle their shit. And what are we going to do for the remaining 10% and take away everybody's freedom? Okay, well, then just admit what you are and say, I don't believe in freedom. Just say it. Okay, I don't believe in freedom. So when you say we got to fight around the world to protect our freedoms, you don't actually mean it because you're against freedom. Because when it comes to the freedom to change your perceptions and your mind and change your mood, well, that one I'm not for. Okay, then you're against freedom. Thank you. Thank you for letting us know what you really believe. And here's a guy with direct hands-on experience saying, yeah, that kind of sucked, didn't it? It didn't work out very well. So from when we started the war on drugs until today, we've spent trillions on it, and more people are using drugs now. And there's, like he said, a literal war happening. So you made it so that people died, and more people are taking drugs, and you just wasted money. It's been an abject, proven failure. Proven. It's not my opinion. Any measurable category you look at, you go, oh, it's failed. So the answer is legalize, tax, and regulate. And then whenever anybody has a problem with it, because of course there are going to be some addicts and some problems with it, like anything else, well, then you have treatment for those people. Is this really that hard to figure out? It's not. All right, break time. We'll come back, and I'll give you some awesome stuff, including... Well, this isn't awesome. It's terrible. But North Korea, killing people over the dumbest shit. And later on, we have a story on a bookstore with an unfortunate name that is getting some blowback at the moment that they don't deserve. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be back.
You brought me a crazy life.
Hey, what you done? I told you about all those fears. And the way they did run, the shore must be strong. Do you feel like an ocean deep won't lie?
Guys, let's get right to it. According to new allegations from the Nigerian government, their former national security advisor stole a tremendous amount of money that was supposed to purchase military equipment for the army to use against Boko Haram. Sir, if there was ever anything that is immoral to steal, for fuck's sake, you stole money that's supposed to go for equipment to fight Boko Haram? Literally the world's worst terrorist group right now. There was articles about this earlier that Boko Haram has killed more people than ISIS in the past few years. I mean, that's the guy, this is like right next to stealing cancer medicine for kids or something like that. Okay, oh, the money that's supposed to go for arms so we protect ourselves against a psychopathic Boko Haram? I'm going to take that. Fuck that. What a horrendous criminal. So President Muhammadu Buhari revealed the charges on Tuesday and ordered the arrest of Sambo Dasuki. This is the guy who stole everything. Vice News reports, quote, the official reportedly awarded fictitious and phantom contracts. Ooh, where did he learn that? The U.S., the phantom contract? For equipment, including 12 helicopters, 4 jets, and ammunition. Oh my God, that's so brazen. He's like, yeah, we're going to get like 12 helicopters for this and some jets and ammunition and stuff. It's cool. And then later on, everybody's like, hey, where the fuck are the helicopters that are supposed to come here? Where are the jets? I feel like we're missing something. Are we missing something? He's in the corner like, I'm sure it's somewhere. Don't worry about it. No big deal. So you ready for how much money he stole? How much money he pocketed? This is incredible. $2 billion. $2 billion. 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 Who does that? Who does that? Guys, I will never understand the mind of a criminal. Because, like, you would think that this person would be rational enough where they say, you know, if I'm going to steal, I should be practical about it where, okay, we're supposed to get a $2 billion contract here. I'll skim $3 million off the top and put it in my pocket, $5 million? But he's like, no, I'm going to take all $2 billion. Who does that? And how do you think you're going to get away with that? $2 billion is a Only in the U.S. will somebody lose that, and then it's a news report for like one day, and then we all move on with our lives. And we shouldn't. We should all get fucking crazy and scream from the rooftops. But everybody's, $1 billion missing here and there. Shut the fuck up. Move along here. That is what came to mind first when I read this. But with the U.S., see, what we did, like under Dick Cheney and the Bush administration, we do these no-bid contracts where the people in the administration knew the people who they were giving the contracts to because they're their buddies from corporate America and defense contractors. They give them these no-bid contracts, and these guys would take the money, put it in their pocket, and then money would go missing in Iraq. Or we'd pay contractors to go in there and rebuild stuff after we leveled it and bombed the fuck out of it. And then they build it in the most shoddy way imaginable where they're pocketing most of the money. There were schools that were built that were never used in Afghanistan. There were even the people – this is how fucked up it is, guys. We would even skimp on building, like, showers and barracks for our troops in Iraq. And there were examples of the water not being treated because we skimped on the funds and people would get sick. They'd get parasites from the water, or they would get electrocuted in the showers because they spent, like, no money building the place, and just the fucking people who got the contract, the ownership class, the elites, they took the money and fucking pocketed it and look around. But in all seriousness, as fucked up as that was, and it was fucked up, and it was on a much grander scale, but at least what they did is they were like, okay, share it among all the elites. That's what they did. So it was a mass level of it. This guy's like, bitch, fuck all you. I'm taking $2 billion. What are you going to do with $2 billion? You don't think people in Nigeria are going to notice? Like, hey, does he have a new car? What's going on here? I don't understand what's happening. God, so why would you do that? Why would you do that? And so it actually got me thinking, and this is what popped into my mind as I was reading the article. I thought, is this the single most brazenly corrupt person on the planet? $2 billion. But the answer is no. It's not even close to the most corrupt guy on the planet. And by the way, I haven't seen any articles that say this is the most corrupt person, this is the second, whatever. There's no like Forbes list for the most corrupt pricks on the planet. But there was one other person that came to mind when I thought, is this guy the most corrupt? I was like, no, wait. It would have had to have been Gaddafi. I got to look that up. Is it Gaddafi? And then I found the numbers. Guys, Gaddafi, you want to know how much he was worth? This is alleged. They don't know for sure. So I'll give you the minimum and what they really think. $200 billion. What in the actual fuckstick? $200 billion? Why would you steal that much from here? And this fucking jackass, like, as he was getting killed in the revolution... He's like, my friend, what are you doing? Bitch, you stole $200 billion! I'm not in favor of, let me be clear, I'm not in favor of, you know, violence unless it's in self-defense or whatever, but could there be a case made for self-defense? If the guy, the dictator, stole $200 billion, he's got the fucking women bodyguards, he's a living caricature. I mean, he really is like the character in that movie, the dictator. Like, that actually is Muammar Gaddafi. Like, he was exactly like that. $200 billion, you $200 fucking billion dollars! You crazy motherfucker, who does that? Who does that? And by the way, the low number, the low ball, I love how this is a low ball. $65 billion. You know, I go back to my main point. I'll never understand the mind of a criminal, the mind of a dictator. You would think they'd be smart enough. Like, okay, so I have total control here, and I think this is human nature to a certain extent, that absolute power corrupts absolutely. The old saying, the old cliche. I think it's true. But you would think that they would, you know, moderation. Like, hey, I'm the leader, right? Maybe if I only take $1 billion? Like, what, you can't make do with $1 billion? Maybe if I only take $1 billion, there won't be a revolution, and they'll like me, and maybe if I tone down my ridiculous fucking gold garments or whatever the fuck he was wearing, you think then maybe the people will like me. And there was a great documentary on Gaddafi where he was... Like, when he was starting to lose it, he was, like, genuinely confused. He's like, I don't understand why the people don't love me. I just want the people to love me. Bitch, look at what you're doing! Look what the fuck you're doing! He would go to girls' schools and pick, like, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, and he would have a room at the girls' school where he goes in there and fucks them. They made a bedroom of his, for a bedroom for him at the girls' school where he goes in and handpicks. And then the girl, he rapes the girl. Why don't the people love me? I don't understand. I just stole $200 billion. Excuse me. Minimum $65 billion. And I fuck their daughters and I pillage their country. Well, I don't see the problem. Pro tip. If you're going to be a scoundrel, if you're going to be a fucking criminal, do so in a sane way, but perhaps that's too much to ask. That's so stupid. I can't, man. Like, I want to move on. I've already spent too long on this story, but think about how stupid that is. So both guys, the guy who stole $2 billion and fucking Muammar Gaddafi, $200 billion. What are you doing? You know what they say? They say that he had enough money to give $30,000 to every Libyan. What the fuck? Unreal. All right. Sorry. Let me move on now. The International Business Times is reporting that North Korea executed three women for circulating a South Korean TV show. They say, quote, the women resided in northern Ryangyang province, I know I'm butchering that, forgive me, and were detained by police officials for recording a South Korean drama based on a true story of a North Korean dancer who defected to the South in the 1990s. In July, said that North Korea has executed 1,382 people over the last 15 years under the leadership of Kim Jong-un. I guess they mean Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il, of course. The executions were allegedly conducted for multiple reasons, including drug smuggling and watching films. The findings are part of an annual report from a South Korean think tank and consist of accounts from defectors between 2008 and 2014. All right, so let me just be clear about this. Should you have a slight grain of salt with this? Yes, because it's coming from a South Korean think tank, and naturally, if there's anybody who's has an incentive and is biased to say negative things about North Korea, it would be South Korea. But then again, having said that, do I think that these are at least somewhat credible? Absolutely. Because, number one, they're doing interviews they did between 2008 and 2014 with defectors. Number two, they have a lot of detail in here as well. So, you know, it's not just like, killed him in this grotesque way and there's no backstory. No, they give a lot of backstory in specific places where it happened. Like, I've been able to, in the past, I've called bullshit on certain stories. Like, there was one, what was it? Not his uncle or something, like he was eaten by wolves or dogs, like that's how he had his uncle killed, or one with a fucking giant anti-aircraft gun, he made him stand in front of it. I called bullshit on some of those, and it turned out I was right. So you have to, like, pick and choose your North Korean stories. They are a horrific regime, and what, you know, they are as close as you could get to the Nazis in all seriousness. They have, like, concentration camps and hard labor camps where they don't feed the people. They eat fucking rats and shit. We know all that. So they're bad, but still, every once in a while, the stories are fake. But these, I believe this one. And I believe it because they describe the show, and you realize, oh, yeah, no, they would kill somebody over that. So, like, they allegedly do it if you watch anything that's, you know, from out that's not approved. But they definitely would prioritize if somebody, and it wasn't just they were watching it, they were, like, distributing it. It was a South Korean show about a defector from North Korea who talks about how evil the North Korean regime is and how she escaped that. And so it's something that directly hurts the pride of the dear leader. They're like, okay, execution. But think about how crazy that is, man. Execution for watching a fucking show. Watching a show. They also say that in 2013, two college students were executed for watching porn. You know, I could deal with a lot of stuff, but when you talk about killing people because they watch porn, that hits home, dog. I mean, you would have had to kill me 700,000 times over? I mean, I'm 27 now. I don't know when I started jerking off, but I was pretty young. That's a lot of nuts that have been busted. I would have been killed a lot, man, just for watching porn. How dare you give in to your natural urges? What do you think? You know, you're a human? That's almost, not fully like it, but almost like it, killing somebody because they have to take a piss or they breathe. Are you acting like a human? You have a sex drive? In North Korea, you only jack off to images in your head of clothed women. God damn it. unbelievable. Look, I'm joking around here, but in all seriousness, this is as fucked up a regime as it gets, man. I mean, this is bad. I mean, you want to talk about, like, strict, like, ISIS territory, and they say, we have a state, and how they treat people there. The closest fucking thing to that is North Korea, where, you know, they have, it's a state religion, where the demigod is the dear leader who they make up all this propaganda. He's never shit in his life, they say. He was able to solve a Rubik's Cube in a matter of seconds. His father shot, like, an 11 the first time he played golf, which is fucking impossible. All this propaganda. So they make it like a religion, and then it's a mass brainwashing, and then anybody who defects in any little way, oh my God, you watched a TV show, kill them. And, you know, some of them have internalized this moral code because it's been propaganda from day one, and they're brainwashed. Others might not believe it, and they're walking on eggshells. But either way, these are people who are living in a horrible state. And the sad thing is there's really – you can't do anything about it because Kim Jong-un has nukes. All day long he has massive amounts of weaponry and arms aimed at Seoul. So if anybody were to try to do anything, it's just, boom, Seoul's gone. So it's a permanent hostage crisis, essentially. And it's terrible to watch. And it's something that breaks my heart when I hear stuff like this. I might actually finish early today, which would be nice. I got two stories left. Researchers at Cornell University wanted to study the difference in eating habits among the genders when they're around each other, and they found some very clear and measurable differences. So apparently, men eat less when they're around other men, when they're around their friends. When they're around women or potential mates, they eat about 93% more food. Now, specifically in this case, they were at a pizzeria. It was 93% more pizza and 86% more salad. I wouldn't be that guy eating salad, by the way, but that's a flaw on my part. And evolutionary psychologists explain this by saying the following, quote, overeating might function as a kind of signal that a person is healthy enough that they can engage in unhealthy behavior of excessive eating and still end up okay. The idea is that it's attractive to be healthy enough to do unhealthy things. So they go on to say, bottom line, to get it down as in as simple terms as possible, this just means that guys are showing off. That's so sad. That makes me like, we're such animals, and human nature is so weird. It's so weird, and there are still people who don't believe in evolution out there. Us? No. We're nothing like monkeys. Nothing at all, even though we have the same number of hair follicles on our body and our DNA is like 99.8% similar. No, we're nothing like them. Dude, look at this. So what's really happening, if you're sitting down with a member of the opposite sex you're interested in that way, if you're dating the person, whatever, if you're eating, like, I might
me eat more. Me good genetics. I can do unhealthy and be healthy because I'm me good. Me want mate.
Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad. Because the thing is, we're aware of it. So, like, we can look at a study like this and respond by going, oh, that's weird and that's kind of sad. Like, we're aware of our animalistic nature. Which, I mean, that's a good thing because it means we have more knowledge, but at the same time, it's like, you look at that and you're like, oh, could we just not? Could we not be like that? Like, you want to override those baser instincts, but then you realize that may not be possible. I mean, have you tried to go, like, 2 weeks without having sex or without getting off? Have you tried to not go to the bathroom or hold your breath? Certain things, nature's like, no, bitch, you got to do that one. So when you're around somebody who's a potential mate, you know, you might even try to fight this now. Like, I'm going to eat less. But the reality is, if their fucking science is measuring, they'd be like, actually, no, you still ate 13% more. And we're all in the same boat together here, man. Oh, and by the way, they say that women, it's actually slightly different for them because what they do is they eat the same when they're with men or women, but when they're around men, they'll eat the same amount, and they'll say something like, God, I felt I overate so much. Like, I ate too much. They don't give the psychological background for that or anything. But it shows you what we're really like. And, you know, you're not to all the far right wingers who are like, we're so special. You're created just by Jesus. No, you weren't. No, you're not really that fucking special. Sorry, I hate to burst your bubble, but that's the truth. They say another theory is like, you know, the men eat a lot more because it's like signaling like, yeah, I could like pack on the weight and, you know, we could be healthy and safe for the winter and stuff. That's one of the ones they say. That's not the one that the evolutionary psychologists themselves came up with. That's the author of the article who threw that one in there. But either way, that's sad. It's like, well, me ate a lot. Me keep you safe. This is what we have to deal with. It's very fascinating, but also my takeaway is very sad. All right, and finally. The Associated Press is reporting that a Denver area store called Isis Books and Gifts has been vandalized 5 times recently. And this, of course, is a result of the terrorist group existing. Quote, the latest vandalism came last weekend when a store sign was smashed after the terrorist attacks in Paris. They say that the name, in this case, it's based on the Egyptian goddess Isis, who allegedly represents the opposite of what today's ISIS represents. They sell books and gifts related to spirituality, religion, and healing. I must admit, I do find it still a little weird and funny that the ISIS that exists today is a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist group. They're a jihadist group, and it's religion. And for this, too, they're like, well, we have nothing to do with that group. But it's still about religion, though. Because ISIS stands for the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And there's another thing. Obviously, they have ISIL now, the Islamic State in the Levant. But for this one, it's different. It's you know, Islamic State. I'm sorry, it's ISIS, the Egyptian goddess. But it's still religion, which I find funny. They're like, it was religion. For them, it's religion for these guys, but it's just different religion. And that I could just see the conversations that right-wing idiots have behind the scenes before they attack it. Hey, we got a bookstore named ISIS? It's named ISIS. Is there a new religion there? It's religion. Oh, go kill him. We got terrorists in Denver. Wherever the fuck it is. Yeah, it's a Denver area. Co-owner Jeff Harrison said, quote, the vandals are some ignorant people believing that somehow the terrorists have a gift store, in the middle of Denver, Colorado. The store has been around since 1980, under the ISIS name. He and his wife, Karen, have owned it since 1997. So he's saying that he's refusing to change the name. And he also says that other people have contacted him who also have stores named ISIS, and they're like, bro, what are you doing about this? I'm getting my shit fucked up, too. You're getting your shit fucked up. Well, what are you going to do about this? He's standing on principle. He's like, no, I'm not going to change the name. But there actually is a serious takeaway from this, though, too, which is that there are always going to be people who do generalize, and they can't help it because they're not that fucking bright. So I don't doubt, like, you know, is it just a trick they're playing because ISIS is on the thing? No, it's people who really might think, like, there might be some kind of connection here. It's like a whatever, some sort of a society that's connected to the ISIS there, and they're sympathetic to it, they're Muslims, whatever. And it shows you that a lot of people do that. So people get mad at liberals when liberals say, you know, hey, don't generalize about Muslims when talking about ISIS or Al-Qaeda. You know, obviously the overwhelming majority don't agree with the barbarism and insane shit that they're doing. And people get mad, like, that's obvious. Why are you you shouldn't even have to bring that up. That's so obvious. No, but you do have to bring that up because of this. Look at this. Sign says ISIS. Me no like ISIS. Me do vandalism. They don't know the word vandalism. Me smash shit. Me break shit. Nah, that's what I'll do. It's like, God, just be smart. Don't be stupid. Think about it. Would there really be an ISIS store in the middle of Denver, fucking Colorado? But some people think maybe. Maybe they're Muslim. You're guilty enough. Go after them. No, that kind of broad thinking is so gross, and smart people need to point out that makes no sense. To draw a really weird analogy here and stretch it back, and a serious one at that, This is the same kind of thinking that led to Japanese internment. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Take Japanese Americans, put in camp. That's something that not only people thought, but they went through with it. They're like, right, that. FDR, a president who was fantastic on many, many issues. He thought that argument was convincing on that one.
Just be safe. American, Japanese, same as Japanese. Lock up.
That's the same kind of shit. The
ISIS bookstore, bad. Attack, same as ISIS there.
Easy, man. You gotta, that tribalism instinct that we have, overlook it or be smart and you know, educate yourself, take in data and information, because oftentimes that data information contradicts your baser nature of the tribalism instinct, where you think the ISIS bookstore in Denver is the same as ISIS, the terrorist group, or you think, well, Muslim, same, bad. Okay. And that's it, doggy dog. All right, we're done here. Nice. 5 minutes early is a fucking record. I like that shit. I guess I could do some shameless plugs real fast. How's that sound? That's always good. I was going to say follow me on Twitter, but I feel like everybody who listens to the live show probably already does. Well, it's at Kyle Kalinske if you don't have a Twitter yet or you're just getting one or you don't know. You follow me there. Oh, also, shout out to Lilith Penn. Lilith does a bunch of stuff for me behind the scenes. She talks in the chat with you guys all the time. She does Facebook stuff. She handles business stuff as well. You can follow her, Stardust Lilith, at Stardust Lilith on Twitter. That would be greatly appreciated. And the best thing you guys could do if you want to support the show and, you know, you're like me in the sense that you're fucking lazy as all hell, all you need to do to support the show is use the Amazon link. So use our Amazon link. So what you do is you click on any of the YouTube videos, any of the Secular Talk YouTube videos, scroll down to the bottom, you'll see our Amazon link. If you click that link and then bookmark it, and then every time you shop on Amazon, you use your bookmark, that'll give 7% to the show every time you shop. So some people go crazy Christmas shopping, buy online like $500 worth of shit. Wouldn't you want to ship 7% of that to moi? That'd be awesome, right? And it doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you anything extra. It's just instead of all the money going to Amazon or the seller or both, they just ship off 5 to 7%, whatever the fuck it is, to me, which is great. So help brother out, yo. And that's it, man. That's all I got for you. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody have a fantastic night. Much love. Peace.